And welcome to OCC.
Morning, welcome to OCC.
Hello, welcome to Oasis Community Church Stratford.
Welcome to OCC.
Morning!
Welcome to Oasis Community Church.
Hello, welcome to Oasis Community Church Stratford.
And in my doubts, in my failures, you won't walk out. Your great love will lead me through. You are the peace in my troubled sea. Whoa, you are the peace in my troubled sea. In the silence, you won't let go. In the questions, your truth will hold. Love will lead me through. You are the peace in my troubled sea. Whoa, you are the peace in my troubled sea.
Sleep. Us and guides us. Help us to keep our eyes firmly fixed on you, the author and the perfecter of our faith. Help us as a church to seek you, to look to you. Such encouraging words in those two songs that we've sung. Be thou my vision, a declaration. I want to see you and in light of you, how I get to live. And I'm just struck by the words in My Lighthouse saying, when you're feeling lost, stuck, out at sea, the waves grow high, the winds blow strong. In your heart, believe there's a light that's shining. It's never going out. Don't give up. No, don't lose hope. The future's looking bright. Church, I want to speak on some of that this morning. As we continue our study into 1 Peter, we're exploring in our series, we're doing a series within a series, we're exploring Joshua, and in chapter 3, when Joshua calls to the people and says, consecrate yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among us. We all want God to do some wonders among us, don't we? But there's a preceding work, there's something that comes beforehand, and it's the work of consecrating ourselves, being set apart, being holy. But doing it in unity, doing it in community, consecrate yourselves. And we're exploring those two words during this season, what it means for us to be a holy community. And we're doing that through exploring the book of 1 Peter. And so we're going to continue that this week as we explore what Peter says to those exiles that are living, those that are a part of God's family, that are living, feeling like they're no longer at home where they've always called home. And he says to them, before anything else, he wants to encourage them. And he says, be a people with a living hope and a lasting faith. And that's what I want to speak into this morning, a living hope and a lasting faith. So whoever you're with right now, whether you are with family or friends or others from OCC, the aim of this morning is not just a monologue. We're going to invite some others to come and share some testimony, but let this be a dialogue. Let this be something that starts a conversation today, this week, around God's word and who he's calling us to be. So let's dive into 1 Peter now, starting in verse 3 as we read these verses together.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to read from 1 Peter 1, 3 to 9. Praise to God for a living hope. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil or fade. This inheritance is kept in heaven for you, who through faith are shielded by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. In all this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that the proven genuineness of your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may result in praise, glory, and honour when Jesus Christ is revealed. Though you have not seen him, you love him, and even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy, for you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls.
I wonder how you would define hope. For many, I guess it's like wishful thinking, isn't it? We hope to be with someone. I hope this won't happen. There's kind of a lack of confidence. It's just a sort of desire that something will or won't happen, but no real reliance on it actually taking place or not. See, Peter in these verses is speaking into hope and faith. And as he speaks into hope, he's saying those of us that have given our lives to Jesus, our hope isn't to be like that. He says, actually, because of his great mercy, he has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. So as we seek to understand what it means to be a holy community, for us to consecrate ourselves, you might think that it starts with what we need to take out of our life, what we need to get rid of and stop doing. Well, Peter will get to that. But actually what he's starting with some of the big building blocks that define the community of God. And here he starts with hope. And he says, it's not just any kind of hope. He says, this is a living hope. It's not the hope that we get in by the skin of our teeth, that we just hope we're accepted by God, that we've done enough to prove that we're okay. But our hope is not like the world's hope of wishful thinking. It is a living hope. And it's a living hope because our hope is based on Jesus. And just to give you a spoiler alert, it can be a living hope because Jesus is alive. He says, because of his great mercy, he has given us a new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. See, as followers of Jesus, we believe that he is alive. He has resurrected. It was a crazy story when it happened, and to many in the world now, it is a crazy story that someone can come back from the dead. But the truth is, only he who created life can resurrect life. Only he can deal with the finality of death, and only he can gain victory over it. See, the resurrection of Jesus from the dead means that Jesus is actually God. And if Jesus is God, then what he did is real. And if it is real, then our hope is not simply wishful thinking. It is a living hope. How's your hope? Mine's starting to grow in confidence just as I speak about Jesus. And I think that's what Peter's getting at. Peter's saying that as we consider his mercy, because of his great mercy, as we think about who Jesus is and what he has done, that whilst we were still sinners, Jesus, who is fully God, came as fully man and died the death that I deserve. Not that I did anything to deserve what he has done for me, that I in any way could earn it. Jesus didn't die for me once I became strong. He didn't die for me once I started to overcome my sinfulness. He didn't die for us once we became friendly towards him. God did not meet us halfway. This is all of his mercy. which Peter says has resulted in a new birth, making us new. This isn't an improvement. This is a complete new, completely made new. We are new as we are before God, new as it comes to our eternity. We have been made new. And when we spend a few moments just talking about that, reminding ourselves of that, of his great mercy that's made us completely new, there comes a living hope. And it's not a hope that is dead. It's not a hope that sits on the shelf and is taken down once a week and looks good around those people that we do church with. It's a tangible hope that starts to impact how we live. A living hope, each and every day, evidence to those around us. As we remind each other of his mercy, helping each other to live out that new birth, our newness in him, we have a hope because Jesus is alive. And Peter goes on and says, and that means that our future is secure, that our hope isn't a wishful thinking that things will turn out. Actually, if Jesus is who he says he is and has done what he said he will has done in our lives through his mercy, giving us a new birth in his resurrection, he says in verse 4, an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled and unfading, kept for you in heaven. There's the hope. Our inheritance is not earned by us, but is kept for you, Peter says. The church should be the most hopeful people on the planet because Jesus is alive and therefore our future is secure. Our hope can never die. That's a light shining in a dark room right there. Starts to get noticed for what it does, that there's a living hope within the community of God. It starts to change how we live with each other, for each other. And people start to see it and notice the difference. There is a living hope. Peter goes on and he shares something else about the evidence of a holy community. Not just a living hope, but also a lasting faith. See, faith is another word, isn't it? That in our world, it's kind of like hope. Hope in the sense is like wishful thinking. I often wonder if faith, people reduce it down simply to a feeling. I have faith in this person. In other words, I've got positive feelings about them. They feel reliable. But for a holy community, as we seek to consecrate ourselves, faith is not a feeling. Faith is trusting. It's four things from these next few verses that I just want to unpack. And we're going to invite some people just to come in and speak into some of these things in the next few moments. Four things as we seek to live out a lasting faith that goes beyond our feelings. And the first is this: lasting faith, lasting trust comes as we reflect on the worth of it. Look at verse 7. He's been speaking about faith and he says, so that the proven character of your faith, the evidence of your faith, the development of your faith in your life, more valuable than gold. There may be many things in life that you value. Is your faith one of them? When you think about the material possessions you have that you value, the people in your life that you value, is your faith one of those things that you ever consider about something that you would value? For Peter, worth is a word that he will continually come back to throughout his letters, 1 Peter and 2 Peter. He will consider the worth of faith here as we're exploring these verses. And later he'll talk about the worth of Jesus's blood. Then he'll go on to talk about the worth of a gentle and quiet spirit. It carries on in 2 Peter. He considers there's certain things in his life that are really, really valuable. More valuable than gold. He puts a really high worth and value on his faith because it's valuable to God, it's valuable to him. And as we seek to put value on our faith, what it can actually do is deepen our faith, deepen a lasting faith and trust in God. To help us consider the worth of our faith, I'm just going to invite David, who's one of our elders, just to share how his faith has been deepened as he reflects on the worth of it.
I believe your ask of me today is to reflect on the worth of that kind of faith, which is often not feeling or doing, but simply trusting. And my first thoughts were, well, that's going to be short and sweet, because Peter's epistle shows us that That's the kind of faith or trust which, in one word, is invaluable. It's beyond value, one of inestimable worth. And I'm thinking that's perhaps also why it happens to be a gift from God, because Ephesians 2:8 says, because of his kindness, you have been saved, I should say, through trusting Christ. And even trusting is not of yourselves. It too is a gift from God. So why, oftentimes, even when we haven't a clue why certain things are happening to us, is this type of trusting faith so necessary to our walk with Jesus? So much so that we're told to rejoice in the various trials of faith which we will face. I think it's because this living hope of salvation we took hold of when we were born again is a continuing process of salvation right through to the future end of our lives on this earth. And so Peter wrote to this dispersion of widely scattered, persecuted believers of that day as a means of encouragement, a hope to the hurting, often in totally hopeless situations. And he achieved that encouragement, I think, by simply giving them a reminder. I read it in verse 7, which says, these trials are only to test, some versions I've read say, the genuineness of your faith, to see whether or not it is strong and pure. It is being tested as fire tests gold and purifies it. And your faith is far more precious to God than mere gold. So if your faith remains strong after being tried in the test tube of fiery trials, it will bring you much praise and glory and honor. I'd like really quickly to encourage you now, just to know that even as God works to perfect this trust in him, his Spirit never ever leaves us alone. It, really, in the horror of not being allowed to enter my wife Peggy's care home during 13 months of lockdown, I just occasionally got brief FaceTimes with her. And I remember on the one occasion as she saw me, her sad, bewildered eyes just said it all. I was totally devastated. Yet in the midst of that, what came to my mind was, as the outer man perishes, so the inner man is renewed day by day. And that wasn't for me. That was to give me encouragement regarding her. The following day, I asked, well, why her and not me? A while later, I happened to read from Isaiah 48:10, I have chosen you in the furnace of affliction. And what blessed me, I don't know where it came from, but there was a note at it which said, where eternal love reveals its secrets and declares its choice, and God makes to us our calling and election plain. Here's the encouragement. Here's the worth of the faith which simply trusts.
Thank you, David, for that encouragement and your story. Just one of seeing somebody put value in their faith, that God puts value in our faith. Do we, that we would invest in it and develop that relationship with Jesus, that there may be days where we spend time with him and we do not understand what has happened in that moment, if anything at all. Maybe we write something down or we just sense nothing. But actually, years later, we can look back and go, God, that's what you were forming. That's what you were working, because we can see the worth of it over a period of time. So thank you, David, for that encouragement. As we're reminded by Peter to reflect on the value, the worth of our faith, and it builds our faith, it deepens our faith as we do that. Take time this week just to think back over the journey of your faith, and it will deepen it. And Peter goes on, he says that by the proven character of your faith, more valuable than gold, reflecting on the worth of it. And then he says he's being refined by fire. You see, our faith is deepened. There becomes a lasting faith when we realize that it is refined by the testing of it. That we reflect on the worth of it, and it is refined by the testing of it. the fire that Peter is talking about, the refining fire, he talks of in verse 6. He says, "You rejoice in this, even though now for a short time, if necessary, you suffer grief in various trials." The fire is the trials. And no one wants to go through fire. No one wants to go through trials. But it says in the passage that even though for a short time, if necessary, you suffer. You see, sometimes it's necessary for us to suffer. Sin is removed because it takes us away and separates us from God. But so often trials can be necessary because they draw us closer to God. And in those moments, feelings will tell us that trials mean that God is punishing me. He's angry with me. In those moments, the feeling says, is it really worth it? But a lasting faith that's not feelings, it's trusting, sees that we're being refined in this moment of testing, that God is forming your character, the proven character. It's not disproving. It's not proof that you don't have faith. The testing is proof that you have faith and that God is forming something in you. Now, I want to invite Alistair Taylor just to come and share his story with us. Some of you may remember Alistair. He's spoken in our church previously. Alistair is one who is acquainted with grief. He has been through testing and trials. He lost his wife a number of years ago to cancer and the fallout of that in his life. And I'm just going to invite him to share something of what he's learned as God has refined his faith through the testing.
Hi, we're just going to share together a few thoughts for a few minutes on suffering and how it impacts us and how it perfects us. Got to be honest, my strategy for dealing with suffering is this. At the time of the greatest suffering in my life, I tried to initially deny it and run away from it. Then I tried to do deals with God. And I remember sitting in church one Sunday evening, and praying and talking to God and saying, you know, if you'll sort this out for me, if you'll bring healing, then you know, I'll sell the house, we'll be missionaries, we'll go to the uttermost part of the earth, we'll do anything that you want. And what I had to learn and discover was that actually God doesn't do deals, and that wasn't part of his plan and part of his purpose. And suffering, you know, we all go through it at different times, different stages of our lives in different ways. But it is one of the tools, one of the greatest tools, one of the most significant tools that God uses to shape us and to bring good and impact other people's lives. And you know, scripture talks about all things work together for good. Romans 8, very well known and often sort of thrown out, you know, to people. But actually it's true, and it is true even in suffering. So there's my strategies: run away and try and do a deal with God. Neither of which work. What I did find, though, was that actually through in that suffering, in the darkness of it, that God used it and did a few things for me. When I was really struggling with depression and anxiety and ended up in hospital, one of the things God did with that suffering was actually soften me up. And people I met in hospital, if I'm really honest, I would probably have walked by in the street or maybe looked down on or judged previously. Actually, we sat there together and we laughed and we cried and we talked together, and some of those people became my friends. And I realized that actually we're all incredibly in need and in need of the grace and mercy of God, and that pain in my own heart and life that I couldn't deal with and I couldn't work out and I couldn't get rid of and I couldn't seem to get through it, God used it to soften me and I hope make me more compassionate on other people, for other people. The other thing that pain and suffering does is it makes us realize how dependent we are on God. We often live with a myth of control, that we can control this and plan this and do the other. And when suffering comes, you realize actually that we are totally and completely in the hands of God. And that, you know, our very breath is a gift from him. And suffering helps you realize that. It helps you realize that you need him, that you depend on him. It helps to get to bring you back to a sort of an eternal perspective and realize that actually when all your own help and resources are exhausted, with all that help of people around you, however good they might be, when their help is exhausted, that he is your help. And that doesn't always come easily or quickly or feel right. But he does promise not to take that suffering away, but to walk with us and to walk through with us. And it's in that journey, it's in that darkness, what John of the Cross called the dark night of the soul. It's in those places that sometimes you don't seem to meet him. And other times, sometimes looking back, you can find that he was there and you do meet him, and that he changes you and molds you and prunes you to make you more like Jesus. And I've got to be honest, I didn't find it an easy process. It's not a process I'd have said yes to. But in those kind of situations, he doesn't give you any choice. This idea that God's an English gentleman who asks permission is utter rubbish. God does what he wants. He does what he wants, how he wants, when he wants, in order to fulfill his will and purpose. And often in our lives, suffering is one of those shaping things that we don't wish for, don't choose, and don't want, and wouldn't want to go through again. But God uses, and he uses it for his glory. And our challenge is to lay our lives down and ask for his will to be done, and let him do it how he wants, because he is shaping us for fruitfulness and effectiveness. God bless.
Thank you, Alistair, for showing us how in your story the refining of your faith through trials has been a point where you can trust not in the circumstances of this life, but in Jesus. And through the trials, being refined into the character of Jesus, like gold, as it goes through the fire, the impurities, that which stops it being fully gold is removed. And so through the purifying of trials, that which stops us being human, fully human as God created and intended us to be, is removed. So as we reflect on the worth of our faith, we can see that we look back and see that by God's mercy, all of the sin is removed. But through the refining of our faith, through trials, we see that those aren't taken away, that sin is removed, but trials so often aren't, because where sin separates us from God, it needs to be taken away. Trials draw us near to God, allowing us to be formed more into his likeness and nature, to bear his image in the world. And that's what Peter's choosing to say to these chosen exiles, about what it looks like to be a holy community, to be consecrate you as we consecrate ourselves, seeking to be holy together. And he says you need to be a people with a living hope and a lasting faith. Hope that's not wishful thinking, because our hope is on something that is secure, on the mercy of Jesus, that he has, through his mercy, he makes us new, giving us a living hope. And that our lasting faith is deepened as we understand that it's about trusting, not feeling. Trusting as we reflect on the worth of it and are refined by the testing of it. And two more things just to finish with quickly. We also, a lasting faith means that we rejoice in the result of it. Just look up, see what Peter says. He says, so that the proven character of your faith, more valuable than gold, reflecting on the worth of it, though perishable, is refined by fire, we're refined by the testing of it, may result in praise and glory and honour at the revelation of Jesus Christ. He's saying we get to rejoice in the result of it. And this is speaking of when Jesus will come again, when the king will return and his kingdom will fully come on earth as it is in heaven. See, for some, the testing and the refining that we go through, we may not see the result of that, the effects of that, the proven character of that, this side of eternity. For some, you might see the results. You may see what God is doing in you in circumstances. You may get that gift this side of eternity. But let me tell you, it's only a small glimpse of what will one day fully be, when one day all of the praise and all of the glory will go to Jesus. If all we do is look at the result of our hope and our faith based on our lives, then we're going to have some good days. But most of all, we will probably have some pretty bad days. But when we look beyond and see that actually the result, the thing we get to rejoice in, is that our living hope and our lasting faith actually starts to bring glory to Jesus, that we can rejoice in that day that is coming where he will receive all the glory and all of the praise. But we don't have to wait until that day, because that day is secure. We know that Jesus is true to his word. That day will come. And so those of us that have a lasting faith and a living hope, we can rejoice today, not based on today, but on the truth of what will happen. And that we sung this morning, he will lead us home. And so we get to rejoice today in the God who is faithful, that one day all the glory, all of the honour and praise will go to Jesus that has been through our lives. And that's how Peter can say in the next verse, he says, though you have not seen him, you love him. Though not seeing him now, you believe in him and rejoice with inexpressible and glorious joy. As a joy. And we can rejoice today in what will one day be, even though you cannot see it today, because our hope and our faith in Jesus, and he will follow through on what he says he will do. Our faith is about trusting. Guys, this is where I'm going to finish. The final R. Lasting faith is cultivated. We reflect on the worth of it. We're refined by the testing of it. We rejoice in the results of it. And the final one, we receive the goal of it. Look at verse 9, just finishing this paragraph. He says, because you are receiving the goal of your faith, the salvation of your souls. See, the goal of your faith is not something you achieve. It is something you receive. Receive the goal of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Church, the goal of our lives, the goal of this church, it's not our goal. It's God's goal. To be more like him and bear his image in the world, to receive that salvation that puts us in Jesus, and then we reveal him to the world. We receive it, you don't achieve it. And the goal is to give you a living hope and a lasting faith to trust in him alone for your salvation. Nothing else that we cling on to, nothing else that we think is valuable, him alone for our salvation. And next week, Ian's going to speak more into what this salvation is that we receive, what that actually means when we gather in person at the URC at 10:30 next Sunday. But for now, can we as a community, whoever you're with, whether you're with others from OCC, whether you're with immediate family, whether you're alone, why don't we take a moment right now to respond? Maybe you just need to stop and reread this passage of scripture that we've just read together in 1 Peter, verses 3-9. Maybe in this moment, you just need to reflect on the worth of your faith. Start to consider his mercy towards you. Just sit and say, God, will you open my eyes more to your mercy towards me, that I have done nothing to achieve or to gain this, but I receive your mercy. And in that, you are making me new. You've made me new, that if you are in Jesus, you have been made new. And that allow that to give you a living hope that is active and changes how you live each day. Maybe you need to speak to Jesus now and accept his mercy. That he has accepted you, will you accept him? Maybe you need to receive the goal of your salvation. Simply say, yes, I belong to you, Jesus. There's probably a lot more you need to say, but that's a great place to start. If you're watching and you're responding to him for the first time, or maybe you're just sensing, God, I can sense your presence. I feel your love. I want to receive it. Then why don't you just say, Jesus, I receive your love. I belong to you. And then maybe you want to speak to a friend who follows Jesus, or you can contact us through our website or right now on email. Maybe just know that you're not alone in this journey, and that as a community that you can be a part of. Maybe you need to just receive the goal of your salvation. Maybe you're being refined by the testing of your faith. Sit with Jesus, knowing that he is with you. Bring the hurt, the pain, the doubt, the questioning. They're not too big for God. It's not lack of faith to bring those things to God. It's proof of your faith that you are bringing them to God. Maybe this morning you need to rejoice in the result of your faith. Rejoice right now. Maybe you just need to give thanks to God. We're gonna sing a song. Becky's going to lead us in a song. Maybe let that feed and lead you to that place of rejoicing. Maybe you just need to let the words wash over you as you reflect on the worth, or you're being refined, or you just need to receive right now. But as a holy community, may we be those that have a living hope and a lasting faith.
From the darkness, I called your name. Into darkness, your mercy came. You called me out, lifted me up.
Church, I hope you've been encouraged this morning as we seek to understand what it means to be a holy community, and we start with exploring our living hope and our lasting faith. During this season, we are stepping into what we're calling gospel communities. That's how we are going to be a holy community, people seeking to live, love and look like Jesus, and doing that together for the sake of those that don't yet know him, an extended family on mission, sharing the story of Jesus in everyday life. And so if you've been hearing some of what we've been sharing and it intrigues you, it excites you, and you want to explore with us during this season, then you can jump on a website that will come up on the screen right now, where it's got a load more information. And also there's a feedback form there. You can just give us your details and we will communicate more with you as we start to share where they're going to be and when they're going to meet in the first step that we're taking as we gather together on the first and third Sundays of the month. And then we're going to be praying together during October so we can share more information with you. So jump on that website, find out some more information. And don't forget, next week we are back in person, 10:30 at the URC on Rother Street. Look forward to seeing you there. Have a great week and God bless.